everybody. Welcome to Story Nerds. I'm Hannah Davis.
And I'm Jessica Kate. And today we have romance author Tari Farris with us. Welcome, Woo-hoo! Tari.
Hi, Woo! Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. Before we kick off with our topic today, which everybody is the friends to lovers trope, so get excited about that because we all are. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Tari, about what you write, about your book, how we know each other?
Absolutely. I write contemporary Christian romance. My book is You Belong With Me, and it came out on September 3rd. So it's been an exciting couple weeks of launching that into the world to get everybody's feedback, which has been really just kind of a fun to see my words out in the world. I know you've had the same experience of just that first time seeing your book on the shelf, seeing it next to people that you're like, wow. My book's next to these people I've always admired. So that's been a super fun couple weeks of that. And You Belong With Me is the first novel. And it's a series, but they're all standalones, but they have connecting characters in a small town called Heritage, Michigan. And it's a small town that they're all just close together. It's kind of like Heart of Dixie. Maybe it heads north or has a Gilmore's Girl feel. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's all that kind of good friends, the over connecting relationships and all these interconnecting. That's the word I'm looking for. Relationships. And so you see a lot of characters in from book to book as they'll show up again. But each one focuses actually has a main romance and then it has a subplot romance. So this one is Hannah. The main romance is between Hannah and Luke. And they've been friends since they were children. And they almost dated in high school, but it did not work out. And then they are in their adult lives, and they're finally realizing that they do want to be together, but they're trying to get past some of the things that always kept them apart. So it's pretty exciting, pretty fun. So Hannah is a realtor, and she sells houses, but she's not very good at it because she always wants to find the perfect person for that house. She feels like every house has a story. She loves history. She loves the old architecture. And the town is full of old houses, and many people want to just buy them up and tear them down and replace them. And so she's having a lot of frustrations with that. She has the opportunity. She sees the town to win this grant. So she sets the town trying to get everybody excited about doing a little bit of town remodeling so that maybe more people would want to move to Heritage and that they can win this contest. So Luke has always kind of felt he's on the outside. And so he's not overly excited about helping her revamp the town. But he does because he cares, he likes Hannah. And but he's also trying to figure out how he fits into this town and if he is going to stick around long term.
Woo! Nice. Okay. So I'm hearing a lot of friends to lovers trope, which is why we picked this topic for today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you want to tell us about your feelings towards this particular trope?
I probably is my favorite trope, but I will have to say it's my favorite trope because it's what happened between my husband and I. So I'm a little biased.
We definitely have to hear this story.
Well, yes, and it's funny because my husband and I we actually met at my sister's wedding, and we met, but he was living in California. I was living in Michigan. So we became friends kind of internet. That was right when you could become friends over the internet. We would IM each other back then. And we kind of started to date, but it didn't work. And so it broke things off, but we were still friends-ish. And we ended up at the same grad school at Asbury Theological Seminary. Completely separate. We both had actually been talking about it before when we were friends. We discussed just how we both thought about doing that someday. And so we both ended up there at the same time. And it was almost like both of us were too stubborn to let it go. Like, I can be friends with you. If we're not friends, it's not my problem. It's obviously your problem because you can't handle it. And so we did become friends. And we actually were so honest with each other. I always say we were so honest with each other, it made the first year of marriage really easy. Because he'd be like, well, this annoys me when you do this. And he was like, well, that annoys me when you do this. I'm like, well, fine. And But that year, then we were at grad school about a year together. He had his friends and I had my friends, but we would hang out just the two of us sometimes. And people would always say, oh, are you guys going to date? And both of us would say, no, we've already done that. We're not doing it again. And then he ended up, he went away for the summer. And I remember he called me once. And just out of the blue, and we talked for a half hour. I have no remembrance of what we talked about. All I remember is when I hung up the phone, I kept thinking, it was so good to talk to him. Why was it so good to talk to him? Like, wow. like I hadn't realized how much I enjoyed him in my life until like, okay, I haven't seen you in like 3 months and now I'm talking to you. And wow, this is really, really good. Aww. But I still wasn't sure. I wanted to date. And I always knew I was physically attracted to him. That was never a question. I just didn't think we really worked together. Because, I mean, you can be physically attracted to somebody and it's just not going to work.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's so many times we would, like, kind of flirt around with the idea. And I'd be like, no, this isn't going to work. I think he almost gave up on me, actually. And so it wasn't actually till February we finally started dating. And then nobody believed it because we've been pretty much best friends for so long that I was standing there and someone said, who didn't know us really, said, oh, is that your boyfriend out there? And everybody standing around said, oh no, they're just friends. And this was just after we started dating and nobody really knew. And I said, actually, and everybody just turned and stared at us. They're like, really? Finally?
Oh!
Yeah, we actually are dating. So So yeah, I always say that it worked out really well, I think, because we were so honest with each other. We had such a good friendship that we based it on, and we didn't allow a lot of that physical didn't interfere with getting to know each other because we were like, this is who I am, and I'm not pretending to be somebody I'm not because this is who I am. So I just really, it worked out well for us. And
I think that's legitimately one of the best benefits of dating somebody that you're friends with is that ultimately, like, hopefully they already know you and there's no problems. There's no problems, but just in the sense that you're free to be who you are. They've known you for that. So you're not pretending to be somebody where you're just like, when you first catch a glance of somebody and you're like, ooh, I kind of like them. And like, you're just, you kind of want to put up that perfect front for them. That's such a great benefit of dating somebody you already know.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think that helped us. And in fact, when we were dating, people kept saying, are you so taking so long to decide if you want to date him? And I said, I know him well enough. I'm not deciding if I want to date him. I'm deciding whether I'd be willing to marry him. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I wasn't saying it was definitely going to lead to marriage, but at that point I was like, I'm not stepping into this unless I know, yes, I could see marrying this guy at this point. And so, and actually after dragging my feet forever, we'd only been dating a month and I turned to him and said, so whenever you want to get engaged, I'm good. And he was like, oh, okay, hold on. And I'm like, well, that's what I was deciding. I've decided. You can take your time. So it was actually pretty fun.
That's so cute. I love that so much. Okay, I kind of want to hear, like, I hear your side of things, but, like, did your husband, was he kind of a Ross in Friends where he just always had a thing for you? Or was it kind of the same for him where you guys departed and you both tried other people, and you were dating other people? Like, what was his perspective in all of this?
I would say he wasn't full-on Ross in that he was more Ross than I actually ever realized, but he played it super cool. Like, I had no idea, and it, really other people didn't know that really thought that how much he really wanted to date me. And I'd be like, we're not going to date. He's like, yeah, I know. I mean, like, he's like, I don't want to date you anyway. You know, I mean, like, he always played it way cool that I was like, hey, we're on the same page. And then there'd be like, little things down the road that I was like, oh, maybe that was a sign that, you know, like, he would drove me like one time, like 200 miles. Cause I needed to be somewhere. And he's like, sure, I'll drive you. And I'm like, okay. People are like, guys, just don't do that to you. I always joke about the fact that the night that we finally got together, I was actually in the middle of telling him why I thought we needed to wait a little longer and take some time to think about it. And I remember I was still freaking out, and I just all of a sudden had nothing to say. Like, I don't remember. All I remember them going on, and then it was like my mind went blank. And I remember I had nothing to say. And I just looked at him, and I said nothing. And I finally looked at him and said, "Do you want to watch a movie?" And he was like, "What?" And I was like, "Do you want to watch a movie?" Like, I'm literally in this long dialogue of why we shouldn't get together. I'm like, "Hey, you want to watch a movie?" And he just looked at me weird. And we started watching a movie. And of course, then we started kissing. So then we did get together. So that was kind of that last, we finally did get together. But he told me later, he was so mad that he started praying and said, "God, if she says one more thing about this, I'm walking out of here and I'm never coming back. I am done with this. I can't do this again." And I said, "See, honey, God still shuts the mouth of lions."
That's so great. So
better than any of the fictional stories I have on my list.
Yeah. I know. People keep saying, like, I'm like, you know, you should write some of this. And I try to slip pieces of it into different stories. But and part of it, I'm like, nobody would believe all that. Like,
That's awesome. Well, I'm so glad you told us that story, because it is better than all the stories I've got on here. But would you like to tell us your first fictional one, one of your favorite friends to lovers tropes?
Yes, and I'm trying to remember. I'm completely blanking on the name for some reason, but it's the one with Josh Duhamel.
Oh, yes.
Which one? There's a few. Oh.
It's the one with Josh Duhamel and the girl from...
The Piggly Wiggly, or is she...
No, they have the baby together.
Yes, Life as We Know It.
Life as We Know It.
Yes, thank you. I'm like searching his IMDb page, being like, which one is this? I love that one, because again, they're so honest with each other and they're so real with each other, and it just kind of happens because they just live life together. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't recommend moving in together, but I'm just saying they just get to know each other in life and they're friends, and it just kind of slowly happens without them realizing it.
I'm so glad you brought that one up, because I love that one, especially because it's them taking care of the baby too. I mean, that one also kind of fits in the enemies to lovers trope, because they really start off hating each other and then it goes more, which I'm so glad you picked, because I was laughing with Hannah before we started that all of mine, while they do fit the friends to lovers thing, they also kind of fit the enemies to lovers one, because I'm just so addicted to that trope.
That beginning of that movie is so funny, because they really don't hit it off. And I remember one of my favorite lines from that movie is them getting in her car, because he brings his motorcycle and she's wearing a dress. And she's like, "I'm not riding that on our date that I don't want to go on, but fine, I'm going because our best friends want us to go." And so they get into her car and he says some things that aren't exactly lovely, and just she gets so mad and she tells him, "Get out of my car! Get out of my smart car!" And yes. Every time I see a smart car on the freeway, I will yell at the car out loud in my own car, of course. "Get out of my car! Get out of my smart car!" I for whatever reason, I love that line. But that's like the classic, like, "I can't stand you, get out of my life" kind of the deal.
Yes.
Yes, I love that one. And I love that they have to take care of the baby together. Like, I just love stories where people who are not parents together have to act like it, because, I don't know, it's such great teamwork, and it's just so funny. There's so many kid gags you can do to them. It's such a great movie. And I'm always trying to work out how to do that in a novel, but I'm still working on that plot.
Right.
So what's your favorite moment in that movie that just is like that quintessential friends to lovers moment? Like, what is one of those things that you just love about that movie?
You know, honestly, the moments that always get me the most are the ones that are those looks, which is always one of those things I find it's hard to translate into writing, and I'm still working on that. Occasionally, I've read a book that has those moments where, like, when he's walking in they're grocery shopping together, and it's just that happy family moment, and she runs into the doctor, and they start flirting. That look on his face of realization and wanting, I just love those moments. Like, you're figuring it out. Like, all of a sudden, he's realizing he doesn't know what he's going to do about this. And I love those moments. And, so yeah, that's probably one of my favorite, even though it's not even them. I do like when they're always the first kiss when they finally do figure, you know, it out. But I do love those, I guess, when that you see them figure it out almost not together. Like they just, mm-hmm. there's something in them when they just have that look like, oh my goodness, that is what I want. And it, that click, I just love those moments, my favorite.
Yeah. I love the montage of them like parenting and he's like walking around the house in his underwear and the baby's doing it in a nappy and he's like trying to feed her crushed watermelon and like all those frustrating parent moments that they're trying to work out together. They crack me up. I love it. And when the baby walks, but she's like, no, no, I'm not there. Like staller. Yes. And so he like pushes the baby and she falls down and cries.
Yes, that is the best.
Yeah. That was great.
I just watched that movie recently. It must have only been like, I don't know. It was within a month and I howled. Like I still love that movie. It's definitely not what I would consider like kind of the classic era romantic comedy. Cause in my mind, it's like the 90s to 2000s are like classic rom-com era, but that one's comes a little later, but it's just as good, if not better, than some of those.
Nice. Well, what's the first one on your list, Hannah?
Oh, okay. We have this problem every episode. There's way too many to get to. I think I'm just going to go in along the lines of Josh Duhamel. First of all, because he's from North Dakota.
Heck yes.
He grew up in Minot, North Dakota, and I graduated high school in Bismarck, North Dakota. And sometimes when I tweet him about North Dakota, he retweets me or replies to me. So just saying.
Oh, wow. I'm just so privileged to know you. Wow.
I know. You should feel so privileged. Oh, I don't know. It's just that.
You really tweet him?
I have in the past. Yes. Like, he loves North Dakota. He talks about it all the time. And I have a very soft place in my heart for North Dakota. And so I have, on occasion, tweeted him about things to do with, like, mostly my old dance team, who I still am connected with, like, the coaches who still coach there. And I remember tweeting once about the dance team and it, like, they were at nationals and I'm like, what about a little good luck? And he retweeted and all of the dance girls, all of the team members at that point, I mean, this was years ago, but all of the dance girls were just like, oh my gosh. So I felt pretty happy that I instigated it. Anyway,
that's awesome.
Aside from that, he is not, I mean, he's kind of the anti-hero in, the movie I am going to reference, which is Win a Date with Tad Hamilton.
I like that one. I only bought that from the op shop the other day. It's a good one.
It's Kate Boswell. I can't remember her.
I don't know. But it's the guy out of that 70s show.
It's Kate Bosworth and Topher Grace.
Yes. Who also.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I looked it up. I didn't just know that. I was like, it's right there.
Well, thanks for looking it up for me, Terry. But yeah, so it's a love triangle kind of between Topher Grace, Josh Duhamel, who plays Hollywood celeb star, who's really made it big, and he does something crappy, and in order to kind of like make up for it in the public eye, so that he gets his public persona back up, he hosts a contest where it's Win a Date with Tad Hamilton, and this cute little girl, I shouldn't say little girl, but you know, this cute girl from the Piggly Wiggly in somewhere in rural USA. I don't even know where. I probably like, you know,
yeah, I don't
Tennessee,
even know which
Kentucky.
State it is. Just somewhere rural.
Well, it's a Piggly Wiggly, so it definitely has to be somewhere like in like Tennessee. Or
right.
Kentucky.
It has all these weird phrases that I figured were a local
Virginia.
Thing, but I didn't know it well enough to be like,
I think
that's
a southern thing.
That?
I think it's a southern thing.
Yeah. But anyway, so he, she wins this date, and she, of course, is in love with him. So what was really cool is she goes on this date with Josh Duhamel, a.k.a. Tad Hamilton, who I wouldn't mind going on a date with either, and too bad this is a movie and not real life. But... it was really, they hit it off. They hit it off so much that he decides to follow her back to her hometown and like live in her hometown. and they like hit it off and they have a connection and they're sort of kind of dating and she's super excited. But here on the side is poor Topher Grace, who's been in love with Kate Bosworth's character. And I'm trying to remember what the characters' names are even off the top of my head. But it's one of those movies that it's such like a, it's an unrequited love movie.
Yes, that's so funny.
Yeah, well, mostly like Topher Grace is a giant chicken movie because I don't know why he didn't tell her to start with. But, here we go. He's Pete and yes, she's Rosalie.
Rosalie, that's right.
Rosalie.
And also really funny.
I do like Topher Grace in this.
Jennifer Goodwin is also in this as kind of like the best friend. And she is the best. I love her so much in that movie. I love her in a lot of movies, but she is so great in this movie. But I just love how they are, you know, yeah, Topher Grace. It's like this kind of this like weird unrequited love thing. But at the very end, he runs after her and stakes his claim. And that's, he gets the girl. I mean, as we all should, but.
Well, he kind of tries to, and then she's like, well, you're a big jerk. And then she goes back to him after, like, ditching Josh Duhamel off his plane.
Yeah.
And she chases him in the rain. Well, but she makes him crash his car.
Yes, that's true. What I really love about that one is, of course, the fact, you know how, Terry, we were talking before about you know your friends so well, and he had known her for so long that he knew her, all of her smiles. And he told that line to like all of the different smiles to Josh Mel's character, and it was stolen. And so that was like really disappointing because he basically used that to like kind of keep Rosalie in his
life, to win her over when she was teetering.
And when she finds out it was actually Pete, it's like, what have I been missing this whole time? And she turns around the plane, drives back. And oh, it's just so good.
And I like that she does the smiles thing back to him. Like, she knows his as well. And it's finally clicked in her head. And yes, they're very cute. And I like it because Topher Grace is pretty funny and, like, witty. And that cracks me up. And I especially love the scene, though, when he's being super insecure and, like, Josh Duhamel is showing them around this farm that he bought and he's splitting the boxes. And for some reason, Topher Grace's character thinks that he can compete on this level. And he's like, oh, I'm going to take my shirt off and try to split some wood as well.
It doesn't work quite as good. It is. Oh my gosh. I just remember absolutely loving that one. So that was mine. Jess, you go for yours.
Well, oh man, which ones am I going to say first? Look, I'm going to go with Set It Up. I've been like blogging about this movie lately, and I think I've mentioned on the podcast a bit before, but not too much. So I'm going to mention it again. It is a Netflix original movie. And it is about two assistants who have terrible bosses and they work in the same building. And so to get their bosses off their backs, they decide to try to set their bosses up with each other so that when they're off dating, these poor assistants can go home and have actual lives. And it's super hilarious. And I just love it. It is one of those ones that it is sort of in the friends to lovers category, but it has hints of the enemies to lovers one, because even though these guys are on the same team the whole time, they have very different outlooks on life and a lot of hilarious, witty banter through the whole movie. And but they are friends who just have totally different sort of approaches, or at least allies. Like, yeah, they're probably not so much friends at the start, but they're somewhat reluctant allies who discover they actually have some pretty great teamwork. And it's very funny. And it also has some great pratfalls. I love like a well-executed pratfall
is so good.
in a movie. I don't like particularly fake ones or anything, but in this one, the girl is just particularly good at like sneaking up on people or different things. But the guy actor, like, I feel like maybe this guy was just great at reactions and pratfalls or something, and they decide to put it in because like she'll sneak up behind him and he just like freaks out, and they're just really good reactions. Or he he is walking like past the door, and his boss, at this one point, his boss has seen that his ex-wife is getting remarried, and he's absolutely losing it. Like, he's throwing chairs at the window, trying to smash the 30th floor window and stuff. And he throws something at the door, and the guy's like walking past the door, and then he like jerks back and falls over so that he doesn't get hit by this thing. They're just some really great falls. They really crack me up. I really love that movie.
Yeah, I have to admit, like, applause for Netflix right now, because they have actually stepped up their game, and they have produced some really awesome original movies that I have fallen in love with. So applause for Netflix here.
I literally wonder if my book would have been published had Netflix not started bringing back the rom-com and swinging the tide of culture back in rom-com's favor. Mm-hmm. Because, like, that I feel like was really the starting point of books are heading back that way, movies are heading back that way, and Netflix really helped make that happen.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think they just – it's not like – I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Hallmark movie, but they're just always made at a certain level. And I feel like Netflix brought it back in a way that it's like, these are top, they could be the theater movies. Like, they literally are done so well. But it's, I've just been amazed with what they've done with so many of the movies.
There was a recent action dramedy that I think I posted about on our Facebook page for Story Nerds recently. The one with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston you're getting top two A-list movies.
That was fun. Yes, that was so fun. I liked that.
And it was so good because, I mean, it's not a strict romantic comedy, but it definitely is along those lines, and it's so
it was like
well
a romantic
executed.
Comedy about married people.
Yes, it was so well executed. And, of course, to get those top A-lister actors in this film, hot on the Netflix, like, go Netflix go. So really awesome job. Are running pretty tight on time, so we are gonna do a speed round for our number twos. So Terry, why don't you really quick tell us about what your second choice would be for Friends to Lovers?
I would probably go with Emma or the remake Clueless. Ooh. I just love those. They're both pretty much the same story, so I couldn't pick one.
Emma remake. I didn't know that. I've never seen Clueless. It was just before my time, but okay, I definitely have to. I've been planning to watch it because it's a pop culture gap I've had in my life. Too many people reference it, so it's been on the list. Now it just got bumped up the list because I love Emma. That is a great Gwyneth Paltrow version. Love.
Yes. I totally agree. And that is a very swoony Mr. Knightley.
Yes.
I love very Mr. true. Knightley.
So much.
Yes, so that would be my pick.
So what is it, what's your favorite moment in Emma?
My favorite moment in Emma is, honestly, again, it's that whole, like, those moments that the other character doesn't see, and it's when he asks her to dance, and she says, why not? It's not like we're siblings. And she walks away, and he touches the edge of her dress, and he says, no, we are not. I love that, because you just see how much he wants her in that moment, and you're like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I like the one where I think they're sitting in someone's, like, parlor listening to someone play music or something, and she's a bit sad about something or something, and he notices and, like, comes over and talks to her, and they just have the whole, like, they know each other so well, they can kind of have conversations without actually speaking, and he notices stuff and comes on over, and you kind of see the depth of their friendship there. And I haven't watched it for years, but now I'm wanting to, because I really love that moment. It's super cute.
Yes, that's a great moment, too.
For sure. Okay.
Hannah, what's yours?
I'm going to go really quick. I'm going to mention two. First, I have to mention, we just did a whole episode of Friends. So if you need to, go listen to our episode of Friends from a couple weeks ago. But I have to mention Chandler and Monica. I mean, one of the most ultimate couples from Friends to Lovers you can ever get.
The ultimate Friends to Lovers.
Because, of course, they're in the show
photo.
Friends.
It's next to Friends and Love to Lovers in the dictionary.
It's so true. Yes. I just love how, like, earlier on, just a few episodes before they get together, I mean, it's the beginning of season 4, I believe, that they are, Chandler's basically going through and asking Monica, like, well, would you date me if? And Monica's like, no. Like, and it's at the end of that season that Monica gets a little drunk. at a wedding, at her brother's wedding, and they end up sleeping together. Definitely not the most Christian of moments, but so funny. That reveal, I would have killed to be in the audience during that reveal. That would have been so awesome.
Yes. I've listened to an interview with Marta Kaufman, and the audience screamed for so long and so loud when Monica popped up out of the bed that they had to stop filming because the people wouldn't stop screaming.
Yes. I mean, after all of the Ross Rachel drama for the, you know, the three seasons prior, three and a half seasons prior, it was so good to have like a, that moment. And then the whole, you know, the next like, what, 18, 20 episodes into season four is when they are, or season four. Yes. I'm getting my seasons mixed up, but it's a long while before anyone else even finds out. So it's so fun to see them sneaking around and then you get Joey who knows, and that moment was classic and the rest of them who knows. And it was just one of those moments where it was like, there's nothing better than this. Chandler and Monica, ultimate friends to lovers. And we're like,
and they had such a, sorry, go Terry.
Oh, I just said, I agree.
Yeah. And they had such a great friendship before then. Like, I know when the writers got them together, they had only planned for it to be a 4-episode arc, but then everybody loved it so much they made it last the whole rest of the show. But I think the audience was recognizing something that the writers hadn't quite clicked onto yet. They had laid the foundations for this for the entirety of the show so far. Like, Chandler and Monica were always close friends. There's a couple of episodes where someone, you know, walks into the apartment and they're sitting in those giant armchairs that Monica has. They're both sitting in that armchair just like chilling. I'm like, people are normal friends, like Terry was saying. You're just normal friends. You don't drive to someone 200 miles. If you're just normal friends, you're not sharing the armchair with them. Like, it's just not. It was there beforehand. And any time that Monica was especially sad, there's one where she's really sad about not having a boyfriend, and Chandler tells her that she's the prettiest woman he knows in real life. And there's the one where when Ben is being born in the hospital and she's freaking out that what if she never has a baby, and says, hey, if we both hit 40 and we're not together, then we can have a baby. And
why wouldn't I be married when I'm 40? What's
I'm 40? And he does that whole, oh my gosh, this parachute is a knapsack and falls off the back of the lift. Oh, that's one of my favorite moments.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing. That is classic foreshadowing without the writers even knowing. And I think that's what's so cool about it, too.
Yes. And the thing is, I have learned through the editing process of two books now that, like, we do this, we subconsciously lay the groundwork for certain things in the book. And then your editor reads it and is like, hey, well, like, you've laid this, but then you never quite paid it off. And I'm like, I did what? And she's seen what I didn't. And I don't know if you ever had that, Tari, but yeah, it's funny what we don't recognize in ourselves sometimes.
I do have to briefly mention one more. It was kind of a tie, but I mean, Chandler and Monica ultimate, but I have to get this one in too because it's one of my all-time favorite books, which is True Devotion by Dee Henderson. It's one of her Chandler series. And I know I've talked about this one before, but it's been a long while.
Is that the one with Joe and Kelly?
Yes, Joe. Okay, what? Okay, pause for a second. What is up with all of the, like, best men ever being named Bear? Like, they all just have that same name. Like, Melissa Tang's Bear is one of my favorite characters ever. And just this, I swear, there's been a few more.
It's awesome.
But,
it's a lot of pressure if you ever name a character that. Oh, my word.
He gotta come through here. But there's, Lifeguard Kelly Jacobs is in, they're in California, and she is widowed. Her husband was in the military, and Joe was one of her husband's best friends. And her husband died on a mission. And so we meet Kelly a number of years later as she's sort of coming out of that grief. And Joe Bear Baker. Okay, we talked about the name Bear, but when you put a guy with name Bear in a Navy SEAL costume, not costume, uniform, sorry.
Costume.
A Navy SEAL uniform. It's like, whoo!
You have and then all he of rescues the you from drowning.
I mean, that's the opening scene. Like, that's the beginning of their relationship. But it's so great. I've talked about Dee Henderson before. She has the most. Oh, her books are so unique because they're both intense and suspenseful, but also very, like, peaceful. And I can't. It's like the perfect dichotomy. Yeah. I cannot describe it. Her writing is so unique in that way. And I absolutely love how it's like Joe's job and takes like he, all of her characters, like they really think and pray about how they take their relationship. And like when Joe's trying to figure out this relationship, you just feel safe and protected. And it's so good. Okay. But they were friends and then he has to move and they both kind of maneuver through this like new relationship together. And it's so dreamy.
Yeah, and there's like dead bodies keep showing up and someone's targeting.
Yes.
Keep showing up on Kelly's beach where she's a lifeguard and Joe is having to. I don't know why a Navy SEAL is investigating this, but somehow it ties into his Navy SEAL job. Well, I've read this book many times, but they're a long time ago.
It's because like of it goes back to the mission. Yeah, it goes back to a mission that Kelly's husband was killed on. So it kind of is all ties in together that way. But yeah,
that's right.
He is so dreamy.
And ends up being a person. Yeah. Right.
Yep. It really is. Yep. It's one of the best friends to lovers books out there. It's just such a unique. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. Go read it. I know I've talked about it before.
And the next one is too. The one about Bruce and Grace. Like that was a real friends to lovers book. She was a female fighter pilot. I actually really loved the detail in this book, like the insight into the world of fighter pilots and especially it being a woman. It's like girl Top Gun, that book. It's really cool.
And what's really fun is that like Dee in these books, and I don't think she did it in her following series, but in these books, the True Valor series, she has a glossary at the beginning, which is all of these.
You understand what they're talking about.
Yep, exactly. So you're like, oh, okay.
That's how I learned all these phrases.
Yes, that's always so helpful when you're dealing with a lot of technical stuff.
Yep. Okay, Jess, speed round, last two or one.
Okay, so.
We can never keep it to one.
Christina Lauren's Josh and Hazel's Guide to Not Dating. I read this book earlier this year. It was very fun. It is a general market book. It is about Josh and Hazel knew each other in college and were friends. They were sort of acquaintances. He was her, like, I can't remember what the word is. He was like an advisor somehow. I think he was like a year or two above her in college and was an advisor for her class or something, and she
a TA, a teacher's kind of, assistant, was that it?
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. The system's different in Australia too. So anyway, he was something like that. He probably was teacher's assistant. And she was like dating other people, but she always kind of had a crush on him. And then once she got a wisdom tooth out and was high on pain meds and sent him like this super embarrassing email and stuff. And she's a real sort of very extroverted, very bubbly person who sort of does, she's a bit of a wild, crazy kind of girl. And so she's always just like super humiliating herself near him. All the disasters that happened to her seem to happen within his sight. And he's a very reserved, sensible person. He's the oldest child of a Korean family. He's very responsible. And so they're just total opposites, and he seems to kind of regard her with a slight amount of horror when they know each other in college because she's just so nuts. And then they go and they live their adult lives, and then she becomes best friends with his sister and then realizes at a party that he is related to her, and so she just decides, you are going to be my friend as well. And they end up deciding they're both single and they want to, and they're kind of like, because of the college history, she knows that he would just be like horrified by her, and she's like, oh, I could never date him, I'm too much for him, because she kind of has this history with her parents, like her dad and mum were married, and her dad, she's like, guys kind of like these crazy women like us because we're fun to date, but we're not good marriage material, and because her parents' marriage had ended in a disaster. And her dad had never really accepted her and her mum for their personalities. He wanted them to just be normal, and they weren't going to do that. So she is kind of used to getting rejected that way. So she's like, I'm not going to date Josh. I'm too crazy for him. But we can both, like, find each other people, and we'll go on double blind dates together. So they have this, like, double blind date thing And they're constantly setting each other up with all these different people, but it's like super hilarious about how all the dates kind of end in disasters and blah, blah, blah. And over the course of these like six dates or something, these two become really good friends and you can imagine what happens. And yeah, it's very cute and fun, and them kind of like slowly realizing things about each other. And I quite like Hazel's journey of sort of realizing how her relationship with her dad has impacted her and how that's not necessarily everybody. And that stuff kind of like, yeah, it was nice. It had a little bit more depth, I think, than your average rom-com epiphany. Mm-hmm. So
it was called Guide to Not Dating. Was that it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Josh and Hazel's Guide to Not Dating, because they're not dating each other. They're dating other people. And yeah.
That sounds so good. I love this title. Whoever came up with this title is a genius.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite. I've read a number of Christina Loren books so far this year. I think I only just started reading them this year, and it's still my favorite one, I think, out of them all. So, but I did just read The Unhoneymooners. That was a definite enemies to lovers one. It was entertaining too. and a very fast shout out to The X-Files, because
you have been in an X-Files funk lately. I don't know what it is about that show with you.
I am obsessed. So... it's because in Australia there is a TV channel called SBS. They have recently decided to play one X-Files episode every weeknight. And I had never seen it the first time because I was too young and my parents both hate sci-fi. I don't know how I'm born from them because I love it. And so I had never seen it. I had vaguely heard people reference it. And I hate, like I said before about Clueless, I hate there being pop culture things that I don't know about. And I'm like on a mission to fill in the gaps of pop culture that I've missed, because my family is very not pop culture. So I missed a lot of it growing up, and now I am making up for lost time. So I was watching something else on SBS, and I saw this ad for the pilot of X-Files. And I was like, people talk about Mulder and Scully and that they're like one of the first relationships shows that like people were really shipping for that couple, and it's sci-fi, so I'd probably like it. So I was like, I'm gonna watch the pilot episode, and oh my gosh, I loved it. I'm now up to at the end of season 3, start of season 4. I'd have to watch the first episode of season 4 tonight, and I love it. At this stage in the show, Mulder and Scully are not together and are not even close, but I have heard from other people. I have a workmate who watched the show as a teenager and was obsessed with it. And so I go to work every day and I'm like, hey, Matt, last night I watched the one with the Loch Ness Monster. And he's like, oh, I remember that one. And we talk about it for like 20 minutes every morning. It's now our routine. And so I know that eventually something happens with Scully and Mulder, but I'm enjoying everyone just taking their time getting there. It is a super entertaining show and it just cracks me up. Mulder's kind of a jerk, so we like have a lot of fun at work making fun of him. We adore Scully, so it's really good. And I'm also just loving the 90s. Like, this show starts in 93, I think, and so now I'm up to about 97 or 8. So I was alive at this point, but I don't really remember it. So me watching like the FBI function without Google, I'm still talking about that. I don't understand how the world works. Blows my mind. They're like, I need to find out about this suspect. So, but they can't just Google him. They have to go and find like microfiche newspaper. And they're like, oh, this dude does all this stuff. I'm like, you need to find a newspaper to learn that. Oh my gosh. Like, the world must have been so inefficient. I don't know. Blows my mind. Millennials.
Yes, yes it was. Doing research for a research paper, you have no idea. Like, it was so much work. And then you'd have to look it up. And then you're scrolling through these microfiche being like, I think that's the article I want. And then you're trying to read it and it's all blurry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. As a journalist who has to go through microfiche every once in a while, I can say and attest to how horrible microfiche is.
I know. I've used it once. My Year 12 project was about World War II, and the newspaper in our town was 150 years old. So the library had all the microfiche from like 150 years. So I could flick through to the day that the war ended and find the front page. But I knew a date. Like, I knew which one I was going for. How did people, like, how do you find the article if you don't know where it is? Like, if you're like, I need to find out who this mysterious person is. How do you know where the article was?
You don't. That's the thing.
They did. They would have, like, certain things. I do remember, it's vague, but I do remember there was things that I would look up that would be like, okay, here's some things that may contain that subject. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it was kind of, like, a vague, like, this may contain the subject. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you would, see what I mean? So you would like find the article and you're like, that one doesn't apply. You find the next article and you're like, oh, this one doesn't apply. This one does apply. You know what I mean? But you always had to find five or something. So you always get so frustrated when you're like, ugh. This one doesn't
work. My goodness. Yeah. So yeah, I am obsessed. I am loving the X-Files. It's fantastic.
I want to keep hearing about how it's going. So Jess, we're going to have to come back and revisit X-Files for a minute. But Terry, really quick before we go, I want to know, you have been working on being published for a number of years. Jess and I were trying to figure out how long it's been. I met you at least a couple years ago now. And I kind of want to hear about how it finally feels to have your book out in the world. And like, it's been a long process for you. And I kind of want to hear how that's been and what it's like for you now.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a long process, not from writing, but from where I started, what I would say pursuing publication, where I went to my first ACFW until contract was 7 years. And that's a long time. I'm like, that's how long Jacob like worked for his bride. Like, that's how long. And so, you know, it was to have it now be on this side. It has been such an amazing feeling, but I also felt along with that, I was seeing why for me specifically that time was needed. One, I feel like my book is so much stronger, hitting the world than it was any time along that path, especially like everybody loves Otis, the hippo who moves around town mysteriously, and he was not added. He was not added to the very last pass, like my very last thing I edited him like a year ago. I ended up putting him in, and so I know it was good timing that way. But also with my kids, the launch process has been a lot busier than I ever expected. And with turning in a book at the same time as launching a book and having all these things scheduled. And if my kids were still preschool area, I cannot imagine trying to balance. I know people do. Melissa Ferguson's doing it. But to me, right now, my youngest is 10, and it allows me to be like, you know what? You got to get out. I'm kicking you out of the room right now. I'm locking the door. Don't knock. And there's something to that. You know, I have a 15-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 10-year-old. And when I started, the 10-year-old was, you know, 2. And it would have been much more difficult to do everything that I need to do to get there. But how it feels is just, I mean, amazing. I can't get over it. There's ups and downs, though. Like, I read a really bad review. I didn't mean to. I try not to read bad reviews, but it was disguised as a good review. They made this really pretty picture. I was like, oh, that's a pretty picture. And they tagged me. And I was like, I'll read this pretty picture. And then it would just tore apart my book. And I was like,
why would you tag the author when they tear apart the book? That is just rude. Very much respect people's right to write bad reviews. I'm a former journalist. I believe in doing that. Yeah. But don't tag me in it. Are you trying to rip my heart out?
Right, exactly. I sent that message to my friends. I said to the person who, you know, I wrote this beautiful meme and then just like tore apart my book, I'm happy for you to have your opinion. Next time, just don't tag me. Like, I'm okay. I just don't need to know all that. But most of it, I've gotten so much positive feedback. And honestly, the feedback that's meant the most to me, which is surprising, is so many people in my life who are not people of faith, who they were like, I'm going to read your book. And I kept thinking, okay. Go for it. Because they've never been open to a conversation about faith. You know, I have so many people in my life that they're like, yeah, I don't do faith. But then they come back and they're like, I finished your book and I loved it. And I can't wait for the next one. And I'm like, I just love that aspect of so many people who love it, who I would say I didn't realize. I mean, I feel like God can use those little truths in their life if it's like the only thing they're willing to listen to. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess those are the moments to me that really hit home. And it's like, this is why I'm doing it. You know, not everyone's going to love my book. That's okay. But I love the fact that I have some people connecting who I don't think would necessarily hear some of the stuff otherwise.
That's so, so good. That makes my heart just so happy.
Cool. Well, that sounds great, Terry. If people want to connect with you online or find your book, where should they look?
They can go right to my website. It's terryferris.com, and it's Terry, T-A-R-I, Ferris, F-A-R-I-S. And it's just all smushed together, terryferris.com. And for one more month, my prequel is still free. I have a prequel to this that's a free download, but I have already moved it over to Amazon. Some people are still buying it, even though it's free. And after that, it'll be full only on Amazon. Probably sometime in October, I'm going to move it over. I don't actually know when. So I tell people, now is the last chance if you want it for free. So, and that is a good setup for this book. It's a good setup for this book because it introduces you to the town. But if you just want to go straight to the novel, you can click on the books page, and it has all the different places you can buy it right below in the links.
Yay!
Awesome. And social media, where do you live on social media?
Terry Ferris. I have an author page. It just says Terry Ferris, though. On Facebook, I also am on Instagram under Terry Ferris. And then on Twitter, it gets tricky, I'm Ferris Terry, because somebody started an account in Korea under Terry Ferris, and they never did anything with it. It's funny, because they have
that's so annoying.
I know, that one post from like 1998, and I'm like, really? I guess probably it's not that. Twitter didn't exist back then. Probably
I was going to say, you're at least a decade early.
Yeah, it's okay, so 2008 or 2010, or I don't know, whatever it was, it's been years.
It's been a while. Right when Twitter
opened. And I'm like, oh, come on, but that's okay. I'm Ferris Terry on Twitter. Everything else, I'm just Terry Ferris, and you can find me.
Yay.
Awesome.
And I love to connect with readers, so feel free to... You know, if you want to even drop me a note on my webpage, I do read all those emails and I respond to them when I can, usually almost always.
Yay!
Awesome! Well, we want to give you... Thank you so much.
Exactly. We want to give you a huge thank you, Terry, for joining us on today's podcast. And we also want to give you a huge congratulations. This is, I know personally from knowing you, at least over the last 2 years, I know that this has been a long time coming. So my heart is so happy for you.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful being here, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been super fun, and now I'm like, why haven't we been doing tropes before? I now just want to look up a list of all romance tropes, and that be all our future episodes, with the exception of one sci-fi episode, so I can talk more about the X-Files.
We're just going to try to work in the X-Files once an episode here from now on.
Yeah, that's it. We now have an X-Files segment, and I'll keep you up to date on where I'm up to with the show.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us today, and until next time, have a great week. Hey guys, if you want to continue the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/storynerds and on Twitter at storynerds_chat.
Or you can find us individually. I am on Instagram and Facebook at Jessica Kate Writing and on Twitter at JessicaKate05.
And I am on Instagram and Facebook at Hannah Davis Author and on Twitter at Hannah D Author. Join us next time to tune in and nerd out.
Bye.
Bye.